Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to this week's episode of the podcast. I'm really excited to have an old friend and great wise expert as a guest for you today. His name is Stéphane Labossière, and you might know him as Stéphane Speaks. Stéphane and I met 10 years ago, I think. Yeah, does that sound right?
10, 12, somewhere around that range.
Right, because we're both 25. We met a couple of years ago, and we met because we were both influencers
relationship experts. They identified 12 relationship experts, flew us all in, and gave us a whole presentation and tour and all this stuff.
Yes. So we were match, quote unquote, relationship experts. That's right. And we met there and we're lucky enough to be plucked up and flown into Dallas. And, you know, I'm profoundly grateful to have had that experience and to meet an amazing person like you and to share your gifts. Stéphane, for those of you who don't know, I may be hiding under a rock. Stéphane is a certified relationship coach. He's got an amazing following. If you're watching the video, you can see why. He's got a very calm, present presence to him. He's also an author. He's a speaker, kind of a do-it-all kind of guy. So Stéphane, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
Well, amazing. So you coach women, you coach men. Why don't you tell me, in your experience, first of all, let's get a little bit of your story. How did you get to where you're doing this work? And then we're going to go into the mistakes we all make when we're out there in the dating world.
All right. So for me, it's a crazy journey. It really just started with God, to be honest with you. My degree is in IT, Management Information Systems. I never in a million years saw myself writing books or speaking in front of audiences. If anything, I'm a super introvert. And people don't realize or think that because when they see me on stage, it comes naturally. But it's literally like a switch flips when I speak at events. And then once I'm off stage, I'm back to my introverted self. That's just who I naturally am. But yeah, God kind of led me down the path and was writing a book. It was becoming certified as a coach. And I never knew what the big game plan was. I just kept asking in prayer, what do I do next? And I just kept going with what I heard. And it's led me all to this. And it's been amazing.
So from IT, you're out there programming zeros and ones, code, whatever it is you're doing. And you then are like, okay. And you felt called to helping people with relationships.
Yes.
Wow. Yes. Was there one particular moment that flipped you over the edge?
You know what? I can't identify anything right now that kind of a moment. There's just a series of moments. And again, it's like even in those moments, I didn't understand or grasp what this was building up to. So I never, again, I just never could see. I wasn't trying to look far ahead. I was just trying to get to the next day, the next month. My first 4 years of doing this, I was dead broke. I'm living month to month, check to check. You know, I'm just trying to scrape up what I can. Wanted to quit so many times. And every time I wanted to quit, I would pray and God would tell me, don't go anywhere. And then I would get like some random hit of money out of nowhere, like a client, something. And I was like, all right, let me just keep it going. And then I finally had my breakthrough in like at the end of 2013 and then just rolling since then.
And what was that breakthrough?
The breakthrough was, So at the beginning of December 2013, I had 13,000 followers on Facebook, right? That was the only platform I had at that time. And no, I'm sorry, I had Facebook and Twitter. But anyways, I was prepared to give up, but I came across this guy who was like, "Hey, I do promotions on my page for like $5 a post." This is the good old days, right? Before algorithm changes and ads and all this stuff. And he would charge that. And so I went from 13,000, I did it. I took my last like $150. I was like, I can either pay a bill and get caught up, or I can invest in the business. Prayed about it. God said, invest. I invested. Went from 13,000 at the beginning of the month to 42,000 by the end of December 2013. And then from there, it was like, okay, I'm just going to keep doing this. I'm just going to keep recycling them and just keep pushing, push. And that was the breakthrough. From there, the page took off. And then I started doing it with other social media platforms. And yeah.
What do you think people love the most about what you're saying on social media?
I think that what they love and kind of hate at the
Here we go. Now it's getting
same time
real.
is that I go deeper than the average person does. So I know when I first got into this, I always felt like it was a lot of tips and tricks and game playing and mental manipulation. And it wasn't really getting to the deeper parts of what people were feeling, going through, how to properly ha navigate through things and do it in a healthy manner. Like, I remember when I first started, there wasn't a lot of talk of healing being tied to relationship success. Okay. Whereas now it's way more prominent. A lot more people are talking about it. So, yeah, I think that was one of the things. So, like, I've had people tell me they had to unfollow me because my pulse would hit them too hard.
For
Okay.
real?
Yes. And like some
Okay.
people have come to my events and same thing. There'd be some people afraid to come to my events because they're like not ready for the mirror to be put in front of their face and to go that deep into some situations. So I think that has been what has drawn a lot of people in, but has also made people a little scared to a certain extent.
Wow, that's amazing. And so let's talk about healing and what that means, and what it meant in 2013 and what it means today. I mean, in your experience, is it the same stuff?
Absolutely, it's the same. I think the only evolution I would say is maybe the steps into achieving the healing, and fine-tuning those things. But ultimately, it still boils down to going back into our past. Like there's people who feel like you're not supposed to revisit the past. There's even big time people who think the past is the past, leave it at that. But it's like you can't conquer it,
For
right?
those of you who aren't watching, I'm holding up a red flag. Waving it around.
Yes, because the thing is, you can't conquer something you won't confront. So you gotta go there. And the reality for so many people is their issues, their negative cycles, their unhealthy relationships are all tied to a lack of healing from not just relationships, but parents, siblings, friends, you name it. The healing requires identifying these things. What I call an emotional detox, releasing, getting things off your chest. Because a
How do you
lot
do that? Stop right there. I want you
of
to take us through because I'm loving this. Okay.
okay.
So I'm like, stop. If you now, for those of you out there that are listening to this and you might want to turn this podcast off, you're like, I don't like the two of you and I don't like where the needle's going in right now. But let's just put it in a little further. How do you do? So we walk around in a haze, Stefan. You know this. And I know this. And these devices have made it that much easier to just these devices, our phones, right? We can just doom scroll all day long and not listen to the things in our head that are keeping us stuck. How do we start the process of the detox? I'm going to start us off. Do I sit down and do I journal about all the stuff in my life that I'm upset about or that hasn't worked out for me? Like, how do I start?
Okay. I want to first start by saying what I want people to understand is that feelings are energy. Okay. So when you experience feelings, even thoughts, but when you experience feelings and you do not release, you do not express, that energy stays within your body. All right. Now, if it's something good and positive, might not be too much of a problem. But when it's something negative and unhealthy, that energy can now start to create other issues in your body. I recently had a situation where my blood pressure went through the roof, and it was a combination of a bunch of different stuff that kind of a perfect storm of negative factors. And then I was recovering from all that, and I decided to go play basketball. And when I play basketball, there's a point where the other team pissed me off and I got really upset. And I caught myself and I had to bring it down. And I've been seeing an acupuncturist. And when I told the acupuncturist what happened, they said, yeah, anger triggers things in the liver. And that was one of the things that we were combating to get myself back into a healthy place. There was something called liver on fire that I was experiencing. I'm not going to get too much into that. But the point is, these things have effects on our health when we do not release. So the energy has to come out. Because remember, energy cannot be destroyed. It's there, it's got to go somewhere. You got to release it. Now, how we release it? Journaling is essentially how I would use journaling as a general approach, but when it comes to healing from past issues, we start by first, we want to break it down by identifying the people or the situations that we were deeply hurt by, right? So let's
Yep.
say, for example, we have some tension with our mother, which a lot of people have tension with their mother, and that's probably the one that's hardest to address for a lot of people. Now you can, what I would have clients do is writing a letter, and there's two drafts of the letter. That first draft is like the biggest part of the emotional detox because you're letting everything out raw. Because a lot of people, in trying to express themselves, are trying to be respectful, watch what they say. They're not really letting out the energy, the feelings they have. So it's like if it's your mother and deep inside you want to curse her out and call her all kinds of names, but you don't feel comfortable saying that to your mother. So you may have talked to your mother and you say, yeah, I talked to her before. I let her know how I feel, but you didn't let out the negative energy. So that first draft allows you to let it all out, all the negative energy, if you have it. Some people don't have that heightened of a need to express as far as negative cursing, all these types of things, but some people they do. You let it all out. You're just purging everything from your system. And then the second draft is what we use to kind of clean things up to make sure we're expressing ourselves in a way that if someone read this, they can receive this, right? Or it's easier for them to receive. So doing that and doing that with all the different things that we or people that have hurt us is a huge part of that emotional detox.
Stefan, when you're coaching people, do you have them do these two letters? And if the answer is yes, do you help them tweak that second letter that they can throw in the mail?
So when needed, yes. One,
Okay.
you always do the two letters. There's no compromise on that. The only compromise on writing the second letter would be someone has passed away.
Yeah.
And even then, I would still probably want them to do the second letter if it's a letter to God, because some people are mad at God, right? And they may not need to write a second letter. They may just need to pray, after they do the first letter, right? So there's going to be some exceptions to the rule, but for the most part, there's almost always two letters. And yes, if they need help, because some people don't need any help tweaking it, right? But if they need any help or they want to read it to me, yeah, we do all of that to make sure they're comfortable. Because in the majority of cases, I will want them to send the letter.
Okay, now we're so you make letter one, get out all the negative energy, like have that catharsis in that. Like, get it all out. And then we're going to write a letter that you won't regret sending.
Yeah, exactly.
That won't be marked return to sender.
Exactly.
Okay. And do you find, do people, is it enough to write the first letter? What comes from the second letter?
So the second letter is, there's a couple layers to it. One, it's actually a practice tool to help people take their negative emotions and express themselves in a more effective manner. Because unfortunately,
Okay,
in
fair.
relationships, people don't know how to run their feelings through a filter and get all the bad stuff out before they actually throw it at their partner. And they don't realize how they're coming across and why the partner doesn't receive what they have to say. Because a lot of times it's not what you say, it's how you say it, right? And just fine-tuning that can make a huge difference. So that kind of helps with practice in that area. It also helps with, again, in the cases that this letter will be sent, we don't want to just be heard, we want to be received. Okay? And so if we want to be received, we have to be mindful of how we express ourselves. And so even though these letters may be tough pill to swallow for that person receiving it, when we write it in an energy of love and for the sake of healing and resolving, it just changes everything and it allows that person a greater chance of actually reading, processing, receiving it, and a great outcome coming from it. Now, the outcome of what they do with it isn't, that's not the point of this exercise, because it's all about healing. So even if they're like, "I don't ever want to talk to you again," you still did what you had to do, right? That should not change anyone's perception of the process. But it is great and a bonus when we can get a really positive outcome. And in my experience, the vast majority of cases have been positive outcomes to people's complete surprise and shock. So that's the
Wow.
other reason why we want to fine-tune that letter as well.
I love this. Like part of when you were talking, I got goosebumps about the purpose of the second letter is to help you to come from a place of love and to be able to express your feelings in a regulated way that allows the receiver to receive those feelings in a
Exactly.
way that might feel hurtful, but it doesn't make them just shut down.
Hey, there you go. There you go. Yes.
Okay, now, is this the process to heal or do we need to do more? So now let's say the second letter is off in the mail, right?
Okay.
Let's say the bonus happens and we get an apology from our ex. We get an apology from our mom or our dad that wasn't around or all of the things. We can't choose the stuff that happens to us, especially when we're kids. We don't choose our parents,
Yeah.
right? So is that to your in your experience, we all talk about healing and sometimes I sit around and I wonder to myself, do we ever really heal or do we get better and then manage to go on?
In my opinion, we can fully heal. Most people don't, because most people don't go through the process and they don't see the process all the way through.
Okay.
What it has to be added on to the detox and the identifying of where the hurts are is also forgiveness, right? And I
Yes,
always tell people,
yeah.
forgiveness is for you. It is not for them. It is not saying what they did to you was okay and acceptable. It means you're not going to hold on to it any longer. And it becomes so much easier to forgive when we have to understand that we're all human. And we all fall short. We all make mistakes, okay? And you hear the saying, hurt people hurt people. And it's because what they did to you was more a reflection of the issues within them that were not resolved. All right? It wasn't really about you. The problem is we internalize what people do to us. We take it personal, or we have these high expectations of human beings. And I use the word human beings because it doesn't matter if it's your mother, father, ex-boyfriend, ex-girlfriend, ex-wife, whatever, they're all human beings. We think, oh, because they're our mother or father, They're supposed to be better than the other people. No, they can be worse, okay? Because they're still human beings who just happen to be your mother or father. And when we understand that, listen, we've all, like, I do this thing where when I'm speaking at events, I'll ask the crowd, has anyone ever lied about anything? I don't care if it's like you told someone their food tasted good when it was bad. Anyone ever lie, tell a lie in a relationship? And the majority will raise their hand. I'm like, if you don't raise your hand, you're lying right now.
You're a liar. So you just told me you're a lie.
Exactly. And I'm like, what's amazing is that if we're honest with ourselves, we have all told a lie. But the minute someone lies to us, we act like they are the worst person in the world who has betrayed us and doesn't deserve to have us in their life. And it's like, slow down. We're all human. And I'm not saying that to excuse lying or betrayal or anything. I do think we have to take a deeper look at every situation, because every situation is different. Because again, it is different when someone lied because they told you this dress looked nice when it didn't, versus someone lied because they were doing inappropriate things with the opposite sex. Like, there's levels to this, but at the end of the day, we have to stop internalizing it. And we got to understand that, you know, it's hurt is a part of life. There is no person who has lived this life long enough who has not been hurt. And there is no person who's lived this life long enough who has not hurt someone, whether you realize it or not, in some way, shape, or form. And so I think when we start to give people more grace, give ourselves more grace, it becomes easier not to hold on to this negative outlook and energy about things, and just, again, embrace forgiveness. And then that leads to my next point, and shifting our mindset, because we have to let go of all the negative mindsets or the negative perceptions that came from those hurts and those negative experiences. So it's like, okay, if you were cheated on by a guy and you go through this healing process, but you still think all guys are cheaters or dogs, well, we got to change that. We can't keep thinking like that. And we have to understand that everybody is their own individual. Everyone is capable of falling short, but everyone is also capable of exceeding your expectations. Let them show you who they are for who they are, rather than project onto anyone or anything a negative perception or assumption.
I love this so much. Sometimes I get women, you know, I started my coaching practice, Smart Dating Academy, 16 years ago. And sometimes I will, and we go deep. And so it's like, okay, I went on a date with this guy. And he told me that he cheated on his ex. Is that a red flag? I'm like, based on my experience, long-term over 16 years, probably. And it also depends on how he was telling you what he did. If it was like, I cheated on my wife, can you pass me the salt? Okay, hold on. Waving the red flag. But if it's, I did this, I'm not proud of it, here's the work that I have done on myself since then we can potentially give this person a chance. I'm like, okay, we're going to leave this person innocent till proven guilty, but we're going to do a close watch to see if this person has really done their work. So I'm with you. It's like you listen, and dating is a whole lot of this. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
And would you agree with that assessment? If somebody comes out with, I cheated on my ex, how you would handle that mentally?
For me, I want to know why. I think cheating is one of those things where we have not allowed people to be honest about the why. All right. And too many times society shuts down the conversation. The minute anyone if I'm being honest, the minute a man says anything that the woman didn't do. Okay. So it's like, if he cheated, it's automatically, that's on him. It has nothing to do with the woman. But I'm like, no, you can't do that. And I'll give you one quick example. I had a man who reached out to me many years ago through email, and he was swearing off specifically all Christian women. Okay.
It's a lot of women, dude, that you're swearing off. A lot of women.
He swore up all Christian women because he had been cheated on twice before, right? This event. Then this was the third time his fiance had just cheated on him with the guy who was dating his child's mother. Okay? Now,
I think I followed that. I'm trying to let him. He cheated with
his fiance, the woman, cheated on him with the guy who was dating his child's mother. Okay. So
wow.
Now I hear this, and the thing that rings to me is you've been cheated on three times in a row. Something is off that we're not paying attention to. So I start digging deeper. And what I find is that his mentality is that if I pay the bills and give you a place to lay your head, I've done my job. He has no understanding of emotional fulfillment pouring into his part in any of these other ways. So clearly what happens is these women meet him. He's such a provider. So they want to give it a chance. He seems like a nice guy, but they're completely void of emotional fulfillment. And that opens the door to where they go elsewhere to have those needs met, and it leads to something sexual. Now, again, does that excuse those women? No. But if that man does not learn to fix that issue, he will always be cheated on. Plain and simple.
Correct.
Okay?
Correct.
So to bring this back to what you were asking, I want to know the why to someone cheating, because I want to understand, okay, if I'm that woman and I ask the guy why, and he says to me, well, we stopped having sex. Sex wasn't happening frequently. All right, let's understand that. Now, rather than, oh my gosh, how could you do that just because you weren't having sex? Because that's where it usually stops. The conversation just ends there. No, let's understand.
Why?
Because either we will discover, one, maybe he doesn't know how to push the buttons that make a woman sexually receptive to him. And you need to have these discussions early on so you guys don't have that problem yourself, right? Maybe his libido is way too high. Whatever it is, we can now discover it. And now, if whatever the root issue is something that you feel like won't be a problem for you, then I say you can continue with that man. But if he says to you, for example, well, I needed sex five times a week and she couldn't keep up, and you know in your head you can only do two, all right, it's not even about whether he's a bad guy or not. You're not in proper alignment to succeed with this man. Take that as, all right, now I know I can't match your energy in this area. No love lost. We just have to go our separate ways.
We're good.
That's it.
Get to the why. I see situations similar, like, well, I don't want to go out with this person because they've been divorced three times. I'm like, let's find out why.
Yes.
And over the course of a few dates, I'm like, we're not going to do one therapy session with this dude to find out what happened. Let's give it. Did you have fun? Did you feel safe? Was it good? We have a whole process. Did you feel elevated? Yeah. Okay. Well, then on the next date, let's ask these couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How did that work out? Okay, great. Then the next date, we found this out. Dating is a process of due diligence, right?
Yeah.
And finding out, to your point, are we in alignment long term? Mm-hmm. And so I have women that have come to me divorced four times. They're like, I don't even know if you'll take me on as a client in your practice. I'm like, tell me your story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That woman lives in Seattle, Washington. This woman has this je ne sais quoi, Stefan. I don't know what it is. Four times married. We get her on Match in Washington. She gets on the app. The first dude that pings her on Match ends up being her fifth and final husband.
Wow.
Right. And so the other way around, right? It's like you've
exactly.
got, it's like, find out. Sometimes it's going to be yes. And we coached her on how to talk about her story. Again, you can't pick the stuff that happens to you when you're a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of her marriages was a little better than the last one, but she just needed that final tweak because she had been working so hard on herself to heal. When she came to me, she was 66. Can you imagine? And she's like, I'm not ready to throw in the towel. I was like, man, Sue, I'm proud of you. And she's still happily married, longest marriage now to the fifth guy. But really asking the right questions. That's what dating is. It's due diligence. It's knowing who you are. What are you bringing also? And what makes you happy in a relationship? And
Absolutely.
then finding things out bit by bit, right? I did Steve Harvey's show with him for 7 seasons, and he would say stuff that was so funny. He's like, he's like, think of dating as like sips of water. Right? Take a sip, put the glass down. He's like, so many of y'all want to take it and gulp the whole glass of water down, or just give the person a sip, give them another sip. And that's how we need to think about getting to know people in this society where we live in instant gratification. I can get anything delivered to my house same day or 24 hours. And we take that mentality. When we get out into the dating world, we expect Mr. or Miss Right to be delivered to our inbox, Amazon Prime style by a drone. It's like, hold on a second. You don't want it to happen that fast. My dad, growing up, he would tell me one thing, easy come, easy go. Amazing. So, what else do you think with regards to healing? Is there anything that we missed to feel like we're healed? I love everything that we've already covered.
The only thing I would say is I want to reiterate, you can fully heal. Like, I think too many people think it's this never-ending journey. And because of that, they never finish the process because they don't think there is a finishing to the process. Okay. And what I want people to understand is that when you can complete the process, and it doesn't mean you will never be hurt again, but you'll never be hurt the same. It's not gonna cut you as deep as it did before. Your bounce back from things is gonna be so much better and sharper because you went through this process already and you learned a key thing, which is do not internalize the things that happen to you. All right. And sometimes also realize even sometimes the bad is necessary to bring the good. All right. I always
Amen.
say even Jesus had a Judas. All right.
Real.
So you sometimes you gotta have someone who's gonna stab you in the back. It stuck, it sucks. We don't like it when it happens, but it may open the door to something amazing. And so for those who are believers, I always say, like, just trust there's always a purpose in things, And that makes it easier to just, all right, go through it, go through the process, understanding, listen, maybe God's trying to grow me, maybe God's trying to teach me something. That makes it easier. But even if you're not a believer, I think you can still view life in that way as far as there's always a purpose here. There's always something that I can gain. And maybe I don't understand it right now, but just keep going because there's so many times that we have felt like it was the end of the world. I don't know how I'm going to recover from this, but you're still here. You got through. And the only difference between you and someone else is, did they take a more positive approach forward or a more negative approach forward? That's the two choices. But either way, you're moving forward, whether you like it or not. So let's just do that and let's do it in a positive way and make the best out of each situation.
It's so true. I mean, people have said you got to find the meaning in the mess, right? Or the gift in every situation. And whenever, for example, something I try to practice is, okay, if something comes at me that feels like the punch or the no or, whatever it is that I thought I wanted or needed and isn't coming to fruition, it's like pause. Where's the gift in this? And what it does, it's an instant reframe for me. I learned this from David Guillaume's work, right? It's like if you pause, what a gift, right? Because this gift is teaching me how to be more like the light, more like God, whatever it is. And if you can start to reframe that, what it does is you automatically, you stop fearing things so much. You look at everything, whether it's good, great, that's easy. If it's not good, okay, what's the gift? How do I get to become better in this? And so the fear starts to mitigate, the anxiety starts to mitigate. You start to come from that place of love, right? You start to feel more complete, and then you start to magnetize more towards you.
Absolutely.
What about, we hear a lot, I have a lot of people that will come to me about, well, do I need to be more in my feminine? I get a lot of strong, smart, successful, alpha, high octane women, right? They're like, I've got it all. I've got a great house. I make a boatload of money. I got this, I got the that, and the that, and the that. And yet, love has been elusive. What's happening?
So what's happening to so many people? One, I think that society has screwed people over, and they've done it by lying to us about our true nature, right? And pushing us away from what truly resonates with us, and instead trying to tell us what we should want or what we should do. And what I mean by that is, okay, you have a lot of women where their heart may be being a homemaker, right? But society told them, no, you got to go out there, you got to work, you got to be a boss babe, and all this different type of stuff, right? A man may have certain desires, and they're like, no, you got to be this, you got to be that, toxic masculine, blah, 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 right? And all it's done is cause people to suppress who they truly are. And that has thrown everything out of alignment. Now, when we speak specifically to, let's say, the successful woman who has achieved so much, love has been elusive. Typically, it's because that masculine energy that has possibly worked well for her, and I say possibly because I have an argument to make against that, but what they feel has worked well for them is an energy that works against them in romantic relationships. More specifically, an energy that works against them with the type of man most women desire, which is another issue or another societal brainwash that has happened, is trying to convince us like that a woman doesn't need a masculine man. No, most women desire masculine men. Even if she has masculine tendencies, most still desire that man who, at the very least, is capable of taking charge, handling business, leadership it when needed, right? But we haven't accepted the fact that there's a trade-off that comes with everything. So if you are going to be a woman walking in your masculine, you are more likely going to attract men who are walking in their feminine or not in their masculine, however you want to frame it, but they're not going to be in that energy that you want. And the ones who are, there's going to be a clash. Because, to give one example, if you're the successful woman, right? And let's say you've been 10 years, you've been on your career journey, you've made all these moves. So you've essentially led yourself for 10 years. You meet this masculine, successful man who he also has successfully led himself for the last, whatever, 10, 15 years. And now you have these two people come together, and both are used to doing it their way. Both are very confident in their view and perception of things, right? No one is really willing to take the driver's seat. I mean, the passenger
The
seat.
passenger, you got two people grabbing at the wheel.
Exactly. And when you have two people grabbing at the wheel, the car will crash. All right. Someone has to be comfortable in the passenger seat. Now, when you add more brainwashing that has told women, oh, you can't let a man lead you, you can't let him tell you what to do, all these different things, even when she may want to accept it, her fear or her pride could kick in and be like, no, that, because now she thinks listening to him is a devaluing of her, but it's not. It's just how we achieve harmony. The example I love to give, and it may not resonate with all women because they may not watch sports, but in the NBA, LeBron, most people are familiar with LeBron James. When LeBron James went to the Miami Heat, he was the alpha dog. Dwayne Wade was already on the Miami Heat. He was the alpha dog. In their first year together, they lost the championship. Why? Because there was no defined leader and no one truly took the passenger seat. After that loss, Dwayne Wade went to LeBron and said, "You know what? You're the driver. I'm going to be your Robin, your Batman." They won two in a row after that and almost won a third one after that. Even men have to learn that in certain environments, you have to choose who's going to ultimately be the leader. And it's not a devaluing of anyone. It is how we create ultimate harmony in that relationship. So for a lot of successful women, that becomes a huge challenge. Also, their success and the work environment has caused many to view femininity as weakness. All right. Because in the work environment, a lot of successful women, when you speak to them, they think if I'm feminine at work, I won't be taken seriously. I won't be given the respect I'm supposed to be given. I won't get these promotions. All right. I have to be a dog like the rest of these guys. When I say dog, I got to be more assertive, aggressive, all these different things. Now, I always argue that's not necessarily true because there are tons of stories of women who just by their charm and their looks, got way ahead in their business, okay? And they didn't know anything. If I argue if you combined the charm and the looks with the woman who actually knows what she's doing, that's the most unstoppable force. All right? Because people are going to want to help you and make sure you succeed when whether they're attracted to you, like you, whatever the case may be. That's the bottom line. Okay. But I understand for a lot of women, they feel like the charm and the looks may over, what's the word? Overshadow
Over-index.
their skills and their abilities. And that's where the fear comes. But all that to say, not learning how to leave that at work, because even if you said to me, that's just how it is at your workspace, okay, cool. But you got to learn how to turn the switch off. Because when you get into the romantic arena and dating men, this is not going to work well for you unless you are more willing to embrace a man who may not be the most masculine guy, but who balances out who you are. Because I always say, listen, there are women out there who are successful who deep inside want to be home raising a family. And I pray that they're able to make that transition. But there are other women who are genuinely designed to achieve. That's just who they are. They love it. They're driven by it. It energizes them. They're not gonna be just a stay-at-home mom. They're not set up for that. So for those women, I want them to walk in their truth, right? But they do have to understand that, yeah, you may have to focus more on a man who balances you versus who has all these certain things. And because that's where it trips a lot of women up that are successful.
No, it's so true. You know, I think that you couldn't have said it better. I get a lot of high octane women into our practice. And one of the big mistakes is they are looking for more, higher octane, more alpha, more money. And it's like, hold on a second. What's the scorecard you're going off of? Right? Is money the scorecard? Is it, and it's just like, and it's taking that step back to say, okay, what makes me happiest in my happy relationship? I have them do an inventory of their friends. What makes you happiest with your elevator people, the people that elevate you, and looking at those characteristics. And it's like, nowhere there does it say makes more money than me. It, right? And it's like, oh, and there's so many crossed wires to your point than there were for our grandparents and our great grandparents, right? And I've seen so often, including in my own marriage, right? I've been married 28 years. I am probably the one that you just described, the one who was born to achieve. As you were saying that, I was cracking up. I'm like, what a great way to say it. Like, I want to have straight A's. I want to be this. I want to go to this school. I want to, right? It's like, why was I like that? I don't know how I couldn't have been like that. Like, you just come
Exactly.
out that way, right? Not the kid that dreamt of wearing a white dress in my wedding. It was like, okay, what am I going to do next? And now a great compliment to me is my husband, who we can both play. Sometimes I will take the steering wheel. Sometimes he will take the steering wheel. Honestly, I love when he takes the steering wheel, right? I'm like, can you lead this? He's like, oh, yeah, that's fine, right? Even though I am able to lead every aspect, I don't always want to. But then it's Bella, you need to understand. He is not a mind reader. And this is my own healing, right? When you say, okay, I'm going to say, hey, it would be great if you could help me get this done. Can you just take this off my plate? Absolutely. But I can't expect that the man has X-ray vision into my brain.
Absolutely. And you have to understand that delegating means it may not be done exactly how you would do it, but it's still getting done. All right. And it's getting done effectively. One of the big issues people have, and I see this whether it's in entrepreneurship or in relationships, when someone has been so accustomed to doing things on their own for so long, they don't know how to handle someone doing it differently. Right. The smallest example I'll give is you'll have a couple who they share washing the dishes duties. Right. So certain days he washes, certain days she washes. But when he washes, she feels like you're not washing them right. You got to wash it this way. And to him, it's like, listen, I'm getting it done.
I'm
Whoa.
watching the dishes.
Exactly. But because it's not the way that she feels it should be done, she grows frustrated. And in many cases, ends up taking over those duties herself. Now she becomes overwhelmed, and the man becomes very passive when it comes to helping in certain areas because his mind is, I'm never doing it right anyway. So if she says she can handle it, let her handle it. But then that doesn't work long term, right? Because over time, as you said, it doesn't matter how high achieving a woman is, she wants a break sometimes. She wants to know that her man can at least handle it without things blowing up in their faces. And
Preach.
part of and part of what that requires is this is why when I talk to women about letting a man lead, I tell them, listen, this isn't really about whether you're capable or not. As you said, you're fully capable. It's about what's going to grant you more peace and flexibility in the long run. All right. Because if you do not let him lead or at least show that he can lead in certain areas, what will happen is you will become overwhelmed as time goes along. And leadership is something that has to be practiced. Like you can't be doing everything for a man for 5 years and think you're going to one day when you're finally tired say, okay, now handle this. Number one, because you were the one always handling it, you may not have even realized you picked a guy who's just not capable because you weren't evaluating him for those skills. You're just evaluating him for can he go along with your program? Okay. So now when that moment comes, you become frustrated. It either, if he does handle it, it blows up in everybody's face. So now you take it back and you don't give it back again, or you keep having to do it and now you're pissed off. But if you establish that early, that hey, I'm gonna need you to be able to lead. And the reason why I tell people you wanna identify one essentially final say so, and I tell women, let it be the man, is because in an ideal world, you'll never have a disagreement big enough to cause a problem in your relationship. But God forbid, people who believe in co-leadership, what the blind spot is, if the day comes where you feel passionately about things, about doing things one way, He feels passionate about doing things another way. And there is not a tiebreaker anymore. There is no established, okay, when we're conflicted like this, we'll go to this person and they make the final decision. You're going to have the biggest clash happen at that point. And what typically happens is a woman, and I don't want me to take offense to this, but a woman in that moment, if she feels strongly, if she doesn't get her way, he's going to feel it. He's gonna pay a price. Okay. So you're either gonna have, if he does what he wants, there's gonna be a negative lingering outcome from that. Or if she does what he wants, there will also be a negative lingering outcome because he just felt like he wasn't respected. But also, he may start to now fall back whenever it comes time for him to step up. All right. But if you take the approach of choosing a partner who you could trust, if it has to come down to them making the final say so, you can trust that. Listen, it doesn't mean they're going to always get it right, but you know they're taking the best approach to trying to get the best results. That's going to be your best setup for long-term success. And as you said, it doesn't mean there won't be times where the woman leads. And there's always a shared leadership in any long-term relationship. No one leads 100% in everything in the relationship, but you still need that one that you need to establish that the guy can handle that role and accept him being in that role. And that goes back to a struggle that a lot of successful women, a lot of women in general nowadays, struggle with that issue.
No, you're so right. And Stefan, what would you say to a woman in her 50s who's killed it at work and has all the trappings, but she says, men don't like me. I'm too much for them.
I when I hear something like that, because I've heard that many times.
For real, we live in the same world.
Exactly. I want to dive deeper to understand what is this too much. The reality is this: a lot of people are not mindful of the energy that they're giving off to others. Okay. And so I remember one time I had a woman, she was 41 or 42. She was basically at her wit's end. She wanted to get pregnant. So she was already planning for in vitro fertilization because dating wasn't working. And she was like the head doctor. She ran the whole hospital. And she was having no success. So she said she's been on a dating app. I think she was on Match. And she wasn't getting any hits. Okay. And she's an attractive woman. She wasn't getting any hits. So I looked at her profile. I realized her profile was complete garbage, okay? Poorly set up. So we made the necessary changes with the pictures, with the wording, everything. One day later, messages coming nonstop. But then I said, okay, the problem that I'd identified in her was that she was walking in her masculine 24/7. And it was to the point where even the people at work didn't really like her. All right. They respected her, but they didn't really like her. So we worked on her feminine energy. We worked on her energy overall. And she can tell you right now, immediately, week later, everyone at work started treating her differently. All right. People were being more helpful. They're being more nice, all these things. A month after that, she randomly meets a guy on a flight who was sitting next to her. Fast forward to now, 3 years later, they are married. They just had their kid last year that she wanted to have. She didn't have to do the in vitro, and
Aw.
they're good. And so, to that woman who's 50, 60, 40, whatever, I really want them to be mindful of the energy that they're giving off. And I think starting with asking other people, but not just asking other people, asking other positive people. Because if you are a woman who is surrounded by other quote unquote strong masculine women, they're gonna tell you there's nothing wrong with you. They're gonna reinforce the idea that these men just can't handle you. But the issue is it's not about handling, it's not wanting to deal with. It's almost like if I brought you a man who was very passive, very emotional, right? Wasn't handling his business. And you're like, no, this isn't for me. Would it be accurate for me to say you can't handle him? No, you don't want to deal with him.
I don't want any of that.
Exactly. That doesn't work for you. So it's the same thing with these guys. It's not about having to handle anyone. It's wanting to deal with them, wanting to be with them. And if that is an issue, it starts with your energy.
So could I boil this down from your perspective? When you say feminine energy, is it be nice?
That is a huge piece of it, but I want to go deeper than just be nice.
Okay, let's go there. That's why I'm asking you the questions.
All right. So I'll give this example. There's a lot of women who say to me, well, I'm just not that feminine, right? That's just not who I am. You put this woman around a child, a baby, and the feminine energy starts oozing out of her body, all right? Feminine, without even thinking, without processing, she's just in her feminine. You bring a man around and the whole thing shuts down. So a lot of women have to understand femininity is also vulnerability. Okay? It is, and for a lot of women, it's simply tapping into their true self. The difference between the baby and the man is the baby is of no threat to you, where you see the man as a threat. All right. And because of that, your walls come up. So in reality, for a lot of women, just being the way they are around kids solves the problem. Like if they can tap into that with men, it's a game changer. Another example I'll give is
I like that.
I had a woman, a female client, and I gave the whole breakdown of the feminine energy. And she said, you know what? What's interesting is that she just had her. She was like, let's say, 52. She had her son who was home from college for the weekend, right? So let's say the guy was like 22, 23. He was like towards the end of college. And the whole weekend, she's taking care of him, you know, serving him food, all this stuff, calling him baby honey. When the son left, the boyfriend said, why don't you ever talk to me like that? You see?
Wow.
And she at that moment was like, oh my goodness. She didn't even realize how with this man, yes, it was sweet, accommodating, all these things for her son, but she wasn't giving that same energy to her man. You see? And so I think it's just one, identifying what's the blockage that's occurring there. But yeah, like it's just, it's be nice, it's be sweet, it's be charming, it's be how you would be with a baby, your child, things of that nature. It's allowing love to flow from you. That's it. I view femininity as a free-flowing energy. Masculinity is more rigid, right? More structured. Whenever I picture femininity, I picture a woman running through a grass field, just skipping and just free, all right? And yes, with that freedom means sometimes it flows in all kinds of different directions, right? That you may not be ready for in the moment. But I'd rather a woman who can be in her freedom than to be stuck behind her walls or in her box, where now that creates a very different negative energy for that woman.
I like that. If you picture yourself as love flowing from you, that's a great visual. Because some women, you know, there are people that are like, I don't like kids. I'm like, how about your dogs? How about your cats? Who do you love? Your friends. Okay. Your night.
Yes.
Who are you when you're with people that just make you exhale?
Yes. That's it. That's it. And bring that energy to others. Learn how not to allow. So we wouldn't tell a man, if a man said, well, I'll be masculine when a woman comes around who's going to be feminine, that would be ridiculous. Right? It should not have. If you have to wait for a woman to be feminine, then you're not really being a masculine man. Right? So I really dislike when people say, I'm going to match their energy. To match their energy means you're letting others dictate to you how to show up. Instead, you need to bring the energy that you want to bring. I'm going to be a masculine man no matter who it is. If you're a feminine woman, be that woman no matter what. And what's amazing is, it's not even just for the purpose of men and romantic relationships. That woman will find herself happier and less stressed once she learns to walk in that feminine, learns to let that love flow freely through her. She will, there's so many women right now who are having mental health issues, who are overly stressed, who's having all kinds of physical ailments, and they don't realize it's because they're constricting themselves and not just letting themselves be free. And of course, part of that is healing, but they got to get back to that feminine. And of course, there's different levels. Not every woman is the same level of feminine, but just get back to your true self.
No, it's so true. And what would you say, Stefan, to a guy that is the, you know, non-traditionally masculine, whatever you call it, more beta, more softer? What advice would you give that guy?
So one, what's hitting me, what's kind of hitting my spirit is first, I want to evaluate his health. Okay. Because in today's society, there is a rise in quote unquote softer men, beta men, whatever you want to call it, right? But a lot of that is hormonal. And one example I'll give you is I had a guy who spoke to me after an event and he was going through a bad breakup. And this guy was super emotional, constantly crying. Now, he wasn't just crying when I saw him. Like I had friends who he was in this men's group and they were telling me how he would have these breakdowns, right? Well, I know that sometimes our struggles are deeper than just what we're going through, okay? So I kept asking questions, and what I discovered was that in his case, he was born without testicles. So ever since he was a baby, he's been getting testosterone injections because Wow. He can't produce it himself. What a lot of people don't know is if you're getting testosterone injections, your estrogen levels might shoot up high as well because the body's trying to compensate and balance things out. And so I told him, I said, have you ever had your estrogen checked? He said, no. I said, I need you to go to the doctor and get your estrogen checked. He went. If let's say I can't remember the exactly, but I think the normal range for a man is 20 to 40 NGL. Okay. His estrogen was 128.
Wow.
And again, here's one. This goes back to the whole societal brainwashing and not being honest about people, about our nature, our biology, all these things. If your estrogen goes up, you will be more emotional. Plain and simple. If we took a man and we start injecting him with estrogen, he will become more emotional. Same thing. If we took a woman and start injecting her with testosterone, she will become more aggressive.
Wow. All right?
There are certain things that are just connected to our biology, but the world wants us to think that that doesn't exist anymore. And that doesn't allow people to understand what's actually going on with them. So with that said, I would first want to discover, okay, like I always say, some men aren't lazy, they're unhealthy. Okay. And if we fix their health, everything else falls into, like, it's a game changer if a guy gets his health together. Now, let's just say he's healthy and he's generally just a more feminine or whatever man, right?
Go with the flow, easy guy.
Yes. One, what I feel is necessary is I think as a man, you still have to make yourself useful in other ways. Like God doesn't give us everything, but he gives us something, right? And you got to learn how to maximize your something, okay? So if you're the easygoing guy, you're a little bit more passive, maybe you're not the most ambitious dude. Okay, cool. Optimize other areas that still make you desirable as a partner. All right. Because listen, I just to give a simple example, if there's a guy who's very easygoing, kind of passive, whatever, right? Not the most successful guy, but he has a job, but his body is amazing. He looks great. If you need him to handle a task, he handles it. So he may not be assertive and take the lead, but he can follow instruction. You tell him to do this, he'll take care of it for you. There are tons of women who'll take that guy, okay? Who'll be like, yeah, I would love the guy who's more assertive, but you know what? This ain't a bad deal.
I'm
okay?
good.
Exactly. So the problem is you want to be passive and you're not optimizing other areas in your life. That you're not desirable in any kind of way when that happens. So I do think it's like optimize those other areas, but also understand who compliments you or who you compliment. Because that kind of guy cannot be with the woman who's going to be the homemaker, who wants to be more in her feminine. He's better suited for the woman who likes to achieve, be out there, and maybe just needs a guy who, again, can go with her program and step up in little areas here and there. But she's like, I'm cool with handling a lot of things, you know? That's gonna probably play a lot better, but again, become useful to her. Because I think the biggest concern for that woman is don't be a liability. That's it. Like, at the very least, do not be a liability. Find a way to be an asset in her life, and you can still succeed at even if you're not the most masculine man.
Stefan, I could talk to you for another 2 hours.
Thank
This has been, I can't believe we've been on for an hour already. This is amazing. You're a gift to
very
people.
much. Thank you.
And where can people get more, Stefan?
All social media platforms at Stephan Speaks, that's Stephan Speaks, or on my store, stephanspeaksshop.com.
Smart daters, I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. We were throwing down some real stuff in this episode. And so if you like this episode, which I think if you have ears, you probably did, share it with someone that needs to hear it. I'm going to be sending it to a lot of people personally. So I hope this made you think about things differently. I hope this made you think about healing. Maybe you're going to write that first letter. Maybe you're going to write that second letter, right? Maybe you're going to call someone. Maybe you're going to forgive in your heart. Maybe you're going to let love flow from you. Maybe you're going to think about what your best assets are and be the best version of yourself and think about, man, instead of me trying to round peg through a square hole myself, who do I want to be with? Who would be great for me? How do I want to feel in my relationship? So I hope we've given you a lot to think about today. And if you're finally ready to take the plunge, check out Smart Dating Academy. Go to our website, fill out a form. I'll talk to you. We'll hold your hand through the process because people like Stefan, people like me, all we want to do is put more love into the world and show you that love is possible for you. Remember, the lid to your pot is out there, and all you got to do is believe it. So until next time, I bid you farewell. And Stefan, thank you again.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.